Welcome to Real World Theology, episode 68. On this episode, we are talking about Ant-Man. And for a superhero movie, we have a super panel. Joining us is Matt Anderson from the Sci-Fi Christian and our very own Griffin Kale and Josh Crabb. So, Ant-Man is the latest installment in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It stars Paul Rudd and Michael Douglas, so it definitely has some star power behind it. But we talk about the concept that after this many movies, how does a Marvel movie avoid franchise fatigue? We do end up talking about the special effects in this movie, which are pretty impressive. Usually that's been a negative of some Marvel movies. Couldn't be a positive in this one. Things like this have polarized audiences, so we kind of talk about why people might be getting tired of these movies, but why some people are doubling down and enjoying them even more. We talk about how the film offers us a conversation about second chances and redemption. And ultimately, we just talk about how much fun we had watching arguably the most humorous installment in the MCU to date. So, here it is, episode 68, Ant-Man and Avoiding Franchise Fatigue. Movie theaters are modern-day pulpits. Real-world theology exists to shed a light on the narratives that are shaping our culture, and to encourage viewers to recognize that entertainment is not mindless. So Josh, you were there, right?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, actually that sounds pretty good now.
Excellent.
So with all the talk of comic book specific, I already have been incriminated that I did not read near enough comics.
Yeah.
But knowing this is why I have certain types of people on episodes about comic book
about
movies.
About comic book movies.
Or about superhero movies.
Except for Avengers. You don't have...
Except for Avengers.
Yeah, you kind of avoid... Yeah, understandable.
Because I was like, why would I want someone who knows about comics? Oh, wait, I did have someone who knew a ton about comics on that episode.
Well, it's okay. I wasn't really high on that movie, so you wouldn't have wanted me on there. I would have been like,
Well, okay, so this is the thing. Like, we have so many comic movies, and we have so many comics about so many superheroes.
Yeah.
Like, did we really need, like, an Ant-Man movie? I'm not even talking about, like, did we like it like this movie? Like, did we need an Ant-Man movie? Like, is there like a comic line? I don't know what each of y'all's history is with Ant-Man specifically. Mostly, like I said, Matt or Josh, or Matt or Griffin, and heck, Josh too, if you just looked into the history of it. But is there like this amazing Ant-Man story that needs to be told?
I'd say no, but
I would say no too.
I like the idea of the character, but there's nothing... I mean, his biggest claim to fame in a positive way is that he was a founding member of the Avengers, and they did away with that in the movies. And, of course, a lot of people know about his biggest claim to fame negative-wise is that in a psychotic rage, hit his wife.
Well, okay. See, I was hoping this would get brought up. Like, because the funny thing about that is, have you ever heard the story of that?
Well, I guess... I've heard
of like how that got drawn and how that like happened.
Oh no, I don't know that.
So it wasn't. So I obviously, I think a lot of this is still speculation, kind of about some stuff, and a lot of it's like kind of industry stories. But the story goes that so they were writing Marvel style, and so there's two different styles, like script comics, which means like they tell the artist draw this in this panel, draw this in this panel, and then I'll like here's the script, and then there's Marvel style, which is like. Here's like a giant overarching story, draw the pages, and then I'll script over it. So supposedly they're writing Marvel style for that issue. And I think like the kind of idea was supposed to be that he was supposed to like push her, and it ended up being drawn like he smacked her.
Like a hand.
Yeah. And so it, you know, it wasn't like, yeah, that's definitely the negative claim to fame of Scott or of Hank Pym.
Yeah. I feel like I've never been able to get away from that.
No, and yeah, since then they've had to write him that way because that was it was such a big moment and fans got in such an uproar about it that they had to write him that way. That's the great thing about comics is, like, if someone in another story, in another book, makes the decision that greatly affects the character, everyone has to write him that way. When you look at, like, Daredevil, that's a really common thing, is, like, the way that he's been written. And I think we talked about that a lot in the Daredevil podcast, about the way that he was written had forced everyone else to write him a certain way.
I even think it was such a serious issue that they had to use Scott Lang in the movie because Hank Pym is tainted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for fans especially. Yeah, but I mean, I would agree. I don't think that... I think that he is definitely one of the older members of the Marvel Universe. Like, you talk mm-hmm. about Astonishing Ant-Man, which was a good little joke. It was a very small joke made in the in the movie. They were like, that's astonishing. Okay. And I was like, this is terrible.
Tales.
Said, Tales to Astonish. Is that what they said?
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
there's no way in the world I ever would have caught that if having not read anything of the comics at all.
Yeah, there's no reason to catch that. So, yeah. But yeah, that was like the old, in kind of the ways that that Tales to Astonish was where, is that right? No. Is that where?
Well, either way.
Yeah, but it's an older story. It's an older book that was around for years, mm-hmm. and that's where Ant-Man kind of had his solo career at with the Wasp.
I think I have it right here. His first appearance was in Tales to Astonish number 27 from 1962. Yeah.
So, you go ahead, Josh.
Yeah, I was going to say, so what, like, as comic book fans, like, I've never read anything by Ant-Man, and I actually ran into somebody that I was talking to about Ant-Man when I was at Half Price Books on Monday, because I was looking at some of the old comics or whatever, and he wandered over, and we started talking about comic books, and I asked him about if he had seen Ant-Man or whatever, so... but like, what's the draw for comic book fans then? Cause I mean, really what drew me to this movie was Paul Rudd, not Ant-Man.
Yeah.
So I mean, cause I guess, you know, as far as Marvel movies go, I feel like this and, I don't know like anything about Doctor Strange or anything like that, but those movies, all these newer ones where they're introducing newer superheroes that are kind of, I don't really know why they're doing them, short of like they just need more characters.
Yeah,
but do they need more characters?
Yeah, and I think that's more the question, is like, do they need these new characters to, like, what are they trying to fill out? Other than, are they just looking at expiring contracts of actors and actresses and saying, well, we may not have you know, the Tony Stark, the Iron Man that everyone knew from 2000s, you know, in RDJ in another three movies, like he may be out.
So that's kind of a good point, Griffin. So in Ant-Man, it's not like we're short of stars.
Mm-mm.
You know, like Josh has pointed out, this headed by Paul Rudd, someone I love.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything that Paul Rudd's done that, even if I didn't like the movie so much, I didn't love Paul Rudd in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're adding star power with Michael Douglas. Evangeline Lilly is fairly well known. Corey Stoll has gotten a pretty big following, especially after House of Cards. So, you know, and it just kind of goes on from there.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a pretty solid cast. At some point, you had Edgar Wright tied to this film. He probably wrote a good portion of this film.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not like a bunch of nobodies. It's still Disney / Marvel putting a bunch of people in this. And you'd think, after contracts expiring, after not knowing how... You know, you can only keep certain characters young for so long.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't keep having Captain Marvel or Captain America be in a movie for 15 years, or it's going to be kind of weird, like Wolverine, you know, getting older as he technically gets younger,
mm-hmm.
and that just getting weirder. So it feels like it should be getting harder and harder to make a good Marvel film, because with every installment, you not only have to make a film stand on its own, but you have to take the time to weave the film back into this Marvel tapestry. So there's kind of like two questions that I wanted to start this episode off with. And one is for you, because we've already kind of talked about, you know, is Ant-Man this thing? Like, are kids wearing Ant-Man shirts? Obviously not. Are kids big Ant-Man fans? No. Are we even Ant-Man fans? Not really. Is anyone an Ant-Man fan? Apparently only spousal abuse people are Ant-Man fans. You know, so Ant-Man doesn't have like a following. It's not like we were craving an Ant-Man film. So does Ant-Man work for you as a standalone film? And then the second question would be, did it adequately also weave itself into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, kind of establishing it as something that needed to be made? So let's try to go Matt Josh Griffin.
Okay, so first, did it work as a standalone film? I say yes, and that was actually one of the best things about it, I guess I'd say, because it did, of course, touch on what's happening in the larger cinematic universe, and the Avengers are mentioned, and we see Falcon, but overall, it really does kind of, yeah, just kind of live in its own corner of the universe. And I got thinking about this earlier today when I was thinking about this episode and how this was sort of a standalone, you know, heist movie, you could say. Guardians of the Galaxy is another example of one that's off in a different corner of the universe, isn't reliant on anything that's happening with the Avengers. And I almost want to see more of that. Like, I know a lot of people have speculated that the Guardians of the Galaxy may appear in the Infinity War with the Avengers. I'm hoping that they don't actually now. I think that the movies can be better if you don't have to rely so much on this continuity that they've built over 12 movies. Because, I mean, even within those 12 movies and some of the other things they've done, they haven't been able to stay perfectly with their own continuity, and it's not that much right now, and they're already sort of messing things up. So, I like the idea that it's just kind of living on its own, kind of in a smaller, no pun intended, scene.
Oh,
yeah. Hey, whoa.
So, Josh, what do you think?
it worked for me as somebody coming in who had no investment to make in Ant-Man whatsoever. I felt that the one of the big things that was surrounding this movie is the fact that Marvel cited parting ways with Edgar Wright because it didn't tie in very. It didn't really tie in much with the Marvel universe or the cinematic universe at all. And I kind of would have been interested if it had just stayed that way and not, because the scene that they added that you can definitely tell was added or tacked on to the movie felt a little bit clunky to sort of tie it a little bit more into the into the Marvel Cinematic Universe when he's when he has that small fight scene with
Falcon.
Yeah, that's it. I know the actor's name better than the superhero. I think regardless of all of that, I enjoyed the fact that it was a fun heist movie style solo film that really didn't tie too much into the universe. Like, I kind of enjoyed the fact that there wasn't a lot of cameos, like all of a sudden there's Iron Man or all of a sudden there's Captain America. You know, it just felt nice to have that kind of a movie again. And I appreciated that they didn't feel a need to try and sidle in a bunch of extra stuff. And I would have been really interested, really, really interested if they hadn't had a script rewrite and everything like that and then just stayed an Edgar Wright movie. It would have been really, really interesting to see how that would have turned out.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess we'll probably get into that later. But that's just a major sticking point for me.
So, but it did work for you as a standalone film.
Yeah, I felt like it did. I know that I had lots of fun, and I really liked it. And I didn't love it, but I liked it. But it worked. And I kind of hinted that a little bit when I wrote about it earlier this week. I kind of felt a little bit that it sounded, it felt like a little, you know, even though it's comparing a bug superhero to a bug superhero, but it felt a little bit like Spider-Man at times.
Mm-hmm.
It was really good.
Okay. Yeah,
there was a big like learning to fly aspect that I totally get with that, like the whole Spider-Man thing. And I think that's the appeal of Scott Lang, is that you have this character similar, I think, to Tony Stark, that is very flawed, requires a lot of kind of careful care of the people around him. Everybody else around him kind of has to like kind of walk on eggshells and keep him in line, because you know, he was in jail and he was a thief and he's got this daughter issue and you know, he's got like all these things going on. And Cassie Lang is such a huge part of his story in the Marvel universe, like, you know, so big. But I think the great appeal of Hank Pym is kind of the same thing you get with Reed Richards, is that he's a genius. He is so good at creating things, and a lot of people in the Marvel Universe go to him for help. And I think that that's the way they'll weave Michael Douglas and his character and the Hank Pym character into the universe as they go forward, basically by having other characters come to him. I think, especially in the Doctor Strange movie, I feel like Michael Douglas is going to get cast in that movie because they see each other a lot. They go to each other a lot.
Right. He's kind of like the more self-aware or more moral version of Howard Stark. At least yeah. I kind of get that feel, not knowing much about comics. But I feel like we haven't seen a ton of Howard Stark. But I feel when they talk about him, they're like, he sort of fell off of a moral path at some point. And that's kind of played out a little bit in Tony as well.
Yeah, yeah. Because everyone's like, because Tony's kind of having to, well, one, in the early movies, he's having to kind of deal with, obviously, like, my dad sold warheads and weapons
right.
to all these, you know, terrible places. And now he's kind of having to clean that up and continue to clean up his own image because his name is still on the side of all these bombs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that shows up so much in the Avengers with the twins.
Man, it's such a callback. Like, you have to be attuned to the universe. And that might be one of the biggest weaknesses of the Marvel Cinematic Universe going forward is you have to call back so much. Like,
yeah,
it's so hard. It's been such a long time since I've seen Iron Man.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I feel like they just need to, at some point, they've, in the way that the comics do so well, they tie in, but they're also so separate. And
yeah.
So I think, like, when I think about Doctor Strange, like, that's probably the most excited I've been for, like, a Marvel, like, announcement mm-hmm. since, maybe besides Civil War. Civil War being announced, I was like, that's a great story that deserves being told.
Sure.
But yeah, like, I think that Doctor Strange is one of those characters that he's so, it's such an interesting, like, concept. And so I think you have him, you have Ant-Man, you have, like, these characters that they're introducing. And hopefully, I would love to see, obviously, like, a Hawkeye movie and a Black Widow movie and these other characters that deserve and hold their own book very well. Mm-hmm. Well, Black Widow, not so much, but that's not her fault. She just had bad writers in comics. It's not her fault. But Hawkeye, for instance, holds a book so well in comics. You know, it's one of the best books of the last, you know, 5 years, for sure.
And yeah, which is a huge shame why he's not getting a movie.
Yeah, and I think that's something where it may be something that's a Jeremy Renner decision that he's like, hey, I don't want to do a solo movie. Or,
yeah, sure.
I don't know. I don't know that as an actor he could carry a solo movie like that.
No,
probably not. Like, I don't feel like that's his style and his strength. But I think that, you know, we know that Scarlett Johansson can, and she can carry her own movie very well, and she's mm-hmm. done it. I look at Under the Skin, and you know, if you look at a movie like that, you can say, okay, like, she can handle it. And so, you know, hopefully Marvel will take these opportunities to separate it out and say, no, this is his own thing. They're, you know, they still have an Avengers card and they still work for the Avengers, but they aren't required to be in all the, you know, they don't have to have help. They don't have to meet up with somebody else to make this movie work. And this movie had enough star power to not need the Falcon. And that was my thing, is he's not a star in comparison to Paul Rudd and Michael Douglas and Evangeline Lilly. Like, he's not.
Right.
So why add, like, if you're going to add a star power Avenger character, you have to add somebody more than that. And that's my feeling on it, is like, that's not your answer.
Well, I mean, I think as soon as I saw, like, him, well, during the film, when Scott Lang or Ant-Man is going to infiltrate what he doesn't realize is New Avengers headquarters in upstate New York, I was like, oh my gosh, which Avenger are we gonna see?
Mm-hmm.
And then as soon as Falcon comes out, I don't want to downplay Falcon, one, because he's one of the only black superheroes that we have to this point. And two, because he's one of the only, like, human superheroes.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be like, oh, well, he doesn't have any real powers. But...
Well, the thing is neither does, like, Ant-Man, though.
Yeah, but, like, there's a difference between flying with a jetpack and actually, like, sciencing superheroing yourself. And I don't think that's too much of a stretch. I mean, you can be nitpicky about it, yes. But... it's kind of like Tony Stark. I mean, I like Tony Stark, but he is more than just a guy. You know, like, he's incredibly, incredibly smart. And to a certain degree, so is Ant-Man. The Falcon is a soldier who has a jetpack. Mm. He's a good soldier, but he's not Captain America. He's not got a super serum. He's not. Anyway, I don't want to spend too long on that. The point is, like, I felt like we got the lowest common denominator for the Avenger that he could have run into.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, kind of like you've already mentioned, Josh, I feel like we got that because they really wanted to give Ant-Man a way back into Avengers.
Mm.
Since we saw early in the film that Michael Douglas' character Hank Pym had already kind of intentionally woven himself out of S.H.I.E.L.D. and that life.
Mm.
And I guess I wanted more. But I will say this, or maybe I should ask this first. Could someone go and watch Ant-Man and have not seen anything else? I ask that, realizing that almost everyone who goes to see Ant-Man, I can't imagine them having not seen many of the other Marvel movies.
Yeah, you're not. This isn't going to probably be your. It's probably not going to be your first.
But could you, Matt? Could you go see Ant-Man and like totally be on board with it without having seen the other movies?
Yeah, I think for most of it you can, but just like you guys were just talking about, I think the Falcon scene would feel really confusing. And even inside the movie, it doesn't exactly line up with what's happening because they say, we just need this piece, I'm just borrowing it, I'll bring it back. But then they blow up the whole building and they are not bringing that piece back, I don't think. So, yeah, I think overall, yes, with some small parts like, oh, that was kind of weird, but whatever.
You agree, Josh?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so I would say this. For me, I really enjoyed Ant-Man. I don't know if it was an amazing standalone film, which I think kind of seems to be the general sentiment. I did think it did enough, maybe even more than it needed to, based on what we saw. I think, Matt, you were talking about, you know, how Guardians of the Galaxy, it, you know, alluded to things in the greater Marvel Cinematic Universe, but it didn't really try very hard to tie back in.
Hmm.
And right. I don't think Ant-Man really needed to try much harder than the opening scene with Hank Pym coming in and being like, you know, F you guys, I'm not doing this. I'm, you know, Howard Stark kind of with a questionable, or a question streak. You know, Howard Stark seems to be like, if it can be made, it should be made. Hank Pym seems to be like, I can make it, but I don't know if I should. And so that seems to be the big difference. And that's all I really needed for them to be tied into the Avengers. But I think this reminded me a lot of Captain America, the First Avenger. It seemed like a really great in-between type film. And what I mean by that is you have the super complexity of tons of storylines coming together in a movie like Age of Ultron. And then you have the almost, which is like all high level stuff. Mm-hmm. End of the world, cities being lifted from the ground, you know, end of humanity type stuff. Like that's what we're dealing with on that level. Then there's a show that we got earlier this year in Daredevil, mm-hmm. which was, this is the personal level. This is the street level of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. This is what it looks like when, like, these are the people that, this is humanity that you're trying to save. And those are vastly different, but somehow beautifully coexisting in the same universe. Ant-Man, to me, is in between those two. It's, these things could have larger implications, but we're really still dealing with the lower level individual company, individual kind of issues. Like, this is a family thing. You're doing it for your daughter. You're doing it for the other guy's doing it for his daughter.
It's like the first Iron Man was that way, where he was definitely just, he was protecting his assets. He was looking out for his company in the first Iron Man. I mean, it was global. It had global implications, but they weren't dealing with actual world saving issues.
Yeah, Tony was dealing with Tony.
Yeah.
For most of that movie.
Most of his life.
Yeah. But so it's not only that, but I think this is another good in-between film because we're going from Age of Ultron, which is going to be another high, you know, which was a high-level film, to Civil War, which is going to be another high-level, almost Avengers light. based on who's going to be showing up in that film.
Right, what the concept is too, yeah.
I mean, so you have end of the world stuff, and then basically, not necessarily end of the world stuff, but like world reaching implication stuff. And you have this one grounding film right in the middle of them. So I thought it was an appropriate time for the film. I thought it was a good segue to remind us of other things that are going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I just enjoyed the film. Like, I thought it was hilarious. I can't wait to see it again. But apparently, I sent you guys lots of articles, lots of reviewers reviewing this movie. And almost everyone I know personally who I asked about this film said they really enjoyed it. You know, they had a qualm here, a qualm there. But for the most part, I saw phrases. Some people were describing like, oh, top three Marvel film, you know, the funniest Marvel film. I enjoyed this one more in a long time.
This one?
Yeah, the Ant-Man. So I had some people saying that. Mm. While other people, like especially in the reviews that we're probably going to link in the show notes, people used phrases like it was forced or it was contrived. It was even forgettable. So, do you guys think it's because people are simply getting into superhero fatigue and others aren't? Or does it maybe have something to do with expectations? Or like, how can this movie be so polarizing?
Yeah,
is it because it came after Guardians of the Galaxy and everyone just loved it so much?
That is possible because it's more quirky than the other Marvel movies. So if it had come out before Guardians, would this have been the big comedic hit that Marvel had? It's possible. But I remember as I was thinking about coming on this podcast, I really liked Ant-Man. It's in my top five, not top three, but top five. And I could see that maybe you guys wouldn't have liked it, so I was sort of worried that I would get on the show and be the only one that actually liked this movie. But that's not to say it's bad. I just, you're right. It has, for some reason, it can go either way, and I don't know if it's because of there's so much history with this where people could kind of tell things were falling off the tracks, but it worked for me. I liked it.
So, Matt, do you think that you had a certain level of expectation going in, maybe? Like, you had low expectations. You're like, well, if Ant-Man's terrible, it doesn't matter because he's Ant-Man.
Yeah, I think that's probably true because you had mentioned earlier, is this a character who I was dying to see on film? Not necessarily. I mean, not at all, actually. But, So going into it, I think I had medium to low expectations. And I think I left there feeling like, yeah, that was pretty good.
All right. Josh?
Well, I was just going to say, to piggyback on what you guys were saying quickly, like, there's no plans for a second Ant-Man movie, is there?
No.
Not that I'm aware of.
I didn't think so either.
Stone, but they have an idea for where they could go with the second one. But it's not, the sequel isn't, like, on.
It'd be like a phase four, right?
It'd be way out there. I mean, we're looking at 20.
Yeah, it'd be way, that's interesting. Because, I mean, I know that they've said that he's going to show up in other movies. Paul Rudd will, and I don't know how much of a part he would play in Civil War, but I know they said that he was going to be in Civil War. You know that they
to some degree or another, they've got to at least acknowledge because of like the story of Civil War, and they have so few, really they have so few superheroes to work with so far. They're going to have to acknowledge everyone because of how that story works. They have to kind of acknowledge that everyone is, if all the superheroes are affected by this directly.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a decision that's being made about the privacy of the superheroes. So, yeah, I think that kind of makes sense.
Okay. Yeah, because I just, you know, I thought it was interesting because I was thinking back after the movie, not before. This is the first time that we've gotten a solo film since First Avenger, Captain America, the First Avenger, which was 2011. So, I mean, there's been a run of movies where it's been... you know, the characters are already established and we've been getting into these movies and, you know, just the quality of like the Winter Soldier and how those characters developed and, you know, the Iron Man movies ended somewhat recently. I didn't have the highest expectations, but I certainly didn't come away from this movie being like, this is definitely my favorite. I think it would favorably... I can't say favorably, but like I like pretty much all of them. At this point, I can't really think of why I would like this one any more than almost any of the other ones, except maybe Dark World. Dark World would probably be under Ant-Man, but then everything else would sort of be above it at this point. And not because I didn't like Ant-Man. It's just there's so many of the other ones that I liked a lot more than this one. But I certainly didn't have, like, you know, I got kind of mad that when I was putting together my review over the weekend, you know, people were putting out reviews that were like, oh, is the Marvel Cinematic Universe out of gas? And, like, Ant-Man is horrible and, you know, and all this other stuff. And it's just like, man, come on. You know, what do you... Just shut up. You know, it was irritating to me that people really were... I think it is the people that are just worn out with the Marvel Cinematic Universe and they really just don't want to talk about it anymore. And so then they just put together some review that takes a dump on the movie.
Yeah, I feel like everyone wants to get... I don't know. I feel like it's the cool thing to do.
Yeah.
I believe we might have talked about this a little bit with Age of Ultron. It's the cool thing to do to start not liking Marvel movies.
Which makes sense. It's like hating the Yankees, right?
Yeah, I mean, you hate the company or the team that can do no wrong. And I'll be honest, like...
It's like hating the Steelers.
Yeah, that's not possible. Not for any rational human being, but like...
I hate the Steelers.
Well, so it seems like that because, like, I'm watching these films and I'm enjoying all of them.
Yeah.
Even the ones that aren't as good, I'm still like, they're better than most of the films that are out.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like I feel like how down on a film can you be when it's... are you judging it based on the other ones... In the Marvel Cinematic Universe, or are you judging it based on like what else was released the weekend or the weekend before?
Yeah,
because when you do that, I'm like watching, oh my god, Ant-Man is so much better than like everything else that came out this month.
Well, it's the comparison of like I'm not, and this isn't quite a fair comparison, but it's kind of like being when you have the history when you root for like a sports team again, making a sports ball reference, and they've won a lot of championships. Like you have a list. Which is the worst championship run of this team? It seems just completely ridiculous to even have that sort of conversation.
Just have it as a list.
Is this the worst champions ever? They're the worst team that's ever won a championship.
That makes no sense.
Yeah, sure. Whatever, man.
Well, okay, so I'll say this. I think Marvel has, they've made a really brilliant decision. They've obviously made lots of brilliant decisions or they wouldn't be making it all the money that's ever existed. But I think we've talked about this with Winter Soldier. We've talked about this with Guardians to a lesser extent. But especially in this movie, it's really obvious to see. Marvel has decided to not make superhero movies, which I think is something they're doing very different than DC. They've decided not to make superhero movies. They're making really good genre films that have superheroes in them. And, you know, we've talked about the fact that the Winter Soldier, even if it didn't have... If you replaced the whole superhero angle of the Winter Soldier and just made it, like, Jason Bourne, it would be a really good espionage kind of thriller movie.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And I think the same thing is true here with Ant-Man. They've made a heist movie, and it's an incredibly fun, interesting... engaging heist movie.
I'm just imagining George Clooney as Hank Pym.
As Hank Pym.
And Matt Damon as Paul Rudd.
I think it would be Brad Pitt.
You would have Brad Pitt as Paul Rudd as Scott Lang?
Well, I feel like that's how they work out, right?
I just prefer Matt Damon in those movies.
Okay, so I know some people, whoever they might be, have described this film as Ocean's 14. If that person was here, how would they really talk about a heist movie in relation to this?
I mean, if that person was here and they were going to talk about that thing, I mean,
so is this not a good heist movie?
It is a good heist movie, okay. and that's the thing is when I look at this movie and I think about because my favorite heist movies of the past couple of years has been the Ocean series, and that's not. Because they're the best. I just think they're funny.
They're fun.
I think they're hilarious and top to bottom, like Al Pacino being ridiculous and, you know, just star power top to bottom with Clooney and Brad Pitt and Matt Damon and Julia Roberts and Catherine Jones. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
We're not stupid. So the thing about this is you have the learning to fly aspect of this movie, which is you have to get the band together because mm-hmm. you have to get a crew. And so you've got, you know, the guy who knows what he's supposed to be doing. You got the pure, like, kind of unbridled talent. You have the person who should be doing the heist. And then you have, like, the goons.
Yeah.
Who are going to help you pull off everything. But they're definitely not, like, who you are. You're not handing them the keys to the kingdom and saying, hey, take care of everything. And so they get that band together so well from top to bottom. Like, I think that they put it together really well. And I appreciated that about this movie. Is it didn't feel contrived the way that they put them together. Maybe the Hank Pym giving the girl like $100,000 felt like a stretch. I'm not going to lie. It felt like a stretch. But it's still like I think the rest of it all fit together really well. And so then from there on, I mean, it's a good setup. You have the training. You have the plan. The execution. There's a mistake in the execution. And then you have a showdown. However that looks, because you have to end up with the thing that you're looking for. And so the thing that they were looking for was to blow up the building. They succeeded. And then he had to finish off, you know.
So
in the greatest train scene you've ever seen.
The greatest train fight you've ever seen since Toy Story 3.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm kind of getting at. This is a heist film, all right? With a heist film, if it's forced, contrived, or forgettable, it's gonna have all those things that you just mentioned. You get the band together, you have the training montage, you have all the roles that are very easy to see, and then you go through it for the prize. And they get through by the skin of their teeth. If it was just that, I would say okay. But I think what makes good heist films are twists or uniqueness of heist or method. And I felt like Ant-Man brought a lot of new ideas to this.
Yeah.
I mean, you're doing it a way no one's ever done it before.
Like, when you look at the Italian Job and what that movie brought kind of to the chase film, you know, it was a heist film at its essence, but it added this element of, like, a great car scene. Like, for a good 30 minutes of that film, it's just a solid car scene of three Mini Coopers flying down the road, and then they're, you know, running away from the helicopter. And I'm just like, that's a good heist film because of that one element. And with this one, it's a good heist film because you have ants and lots of them and their different abilities. And
We didn't just Tom Cruise from the ceiling, use a laser thing, open it up, grab the thing and get out by the skin of our teeth. We did something completely new.
Yes.
So my argument would be that I don't really understand.
Shoot up our girlfriend with the deadliest weapon.
Yeah.
Chimera.
Oh, gosh. Mission Impossible. We'll be talking about that soon, too, on the podcast. So, anyway, I don't really understand, because I thought it was terribly unique for a heist film. Heist films have to follow a certain pattern, or it's not a heist film. And, like I said, if they were just trying to make it a superhero film, it would have been all broody and too intense, and we would have been watching Man of Steel all over again. We haven't talked a lot about Ant-Man thematically, most about it or the reaction to it or our reaction to it or even its existence. But through this film, we have Scott Lang basically getting out of prison for his Robin Hood-esque crime, his, you know, steal from the rich, give to the not-haves or less richers. We're not exactly sure. We didn't really go into that a lot. But he's the crook with the heart of gold. But his decisions have separated from him from his family, from gainful employment, and now he needs someone to kind of come and give him a second chance because even Baskin-Robbins isn't giving him the chance he needs. So what we ultimately have, not just implied, but specifically stated in the conversation between Hank Pym and Scott Lang is this idea that people deserve second chances or a shot at redemption. And while we could get very Christianese about it and talk about how redemption is, how it actually comes about in our specific theology, I'm actually more interested in why people love stories about second chances and redemption. Like, what is it that draws people? Why do they root for the guy who's getting a second chance? What is it about that compels people?
I think we all know that we need a second chance, no matter where you're at in life. There's things that you wish you could do over or wish that you could get a second chance on. And so every single person can relate to that theme, especially, you know, I think, like you said, the themes in this movie weren't subtle, but that's not bad. It's probably aimed at a wider audience, kids and adults. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, redemption was constantly hit on in this movie. And so, yeah, I think we can all relate to needing that second chance, needing that redemption.
Even if it's not out flat out stated, like we all kind of have this subconscious something there.
Yeah, definitely.
Josh?
Yeah, I think that it's sort of a programmed reality of who we are as human beings. You know, to use computer language, which really I just should be saying that we're created to be that way. But you know, we just that's the first thing that I thought of too, that Matt said, is we all want a second chance. And it's not just, you know, a once in a lifetime second chance. Like, we want second chances every day. Like, you want second chances, you want a second opportunity to try and comfort somebody when the first time you said something that was really stupid. And you know, or you, I don't know, you want another chance not to, you know, try and hit that, get through that yellow light and you accidentally run a red light and get a ticket. Like, you want a second chance to do those kind of things again. I'm not reciting my day either. I'm just kind of coming up with examples.
Sure, sounds like it. are you just picking out random objects and telling us that you love them?
I love cell phone. Do I really love cell phone? Paul Rudd, nice. We're tying it all together.
That's right.
Nice, but you know, I think we all want those second chances and the shot at redemption, and we want it, even when it comes down to things like our relationships. You know, I think that's a pretty obvious theme for the two main characters, which would be Hank Pym, the previous Ant-Man, and Scott Lang, the current Ant-Man, and you know how Hank Pym's ambitions to be able to get those second chances with his daughter are sort of played out and are sort of vicariously played through Scott Lang, and he gets that, actually does get that chance for redemption with his daughter as well. So which I thought was actually a pretty great scene, just, you know, that little encapsulated part where he revealed sort of the history of what happened to his mother. Mm-hmm. And that really resonates. Again, I think that was another interesting thematic that resonated, was there, we have a desire to hide the reality of things from the people that we love because we don't want them to experience the pain of that. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really interesting too. And I think for the longest time, I'm always going to compare it to Inside Out. You know, just the whole idea of embracing sadness to bring about joy. And I thought that was an interesting thing. It's like, once he was able to just sort of confess what happened or relay what happened to her, that it led to their relationship beginning to be reconciled to one another. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was kind of cool too.
Hmm. So one of the things that I really like about the idea of redemption is that it seems to point to, how do I want to phrase this? It seems to point to the idea that there is a more perfect ideal. Mm. Because if you don't think that there's a better way to do things, or if you don't think that there's a higher ideal to attain, then you're not really concerned with redeeming anything. Mm. And I just love the fact that that seems to be ingrained in people.
Yeah.
I also really like the idea that in this particular movie, there's this understanding about using your talents and gifts. And I noticed that it was different in the movie than it was in the trailer.
Mm.
That scene where Scott, you know, he's like, you know, I'm done, you know, breaking into places and stealing things. You know, I want my second chance. I want to redeem. I want to be with my daughter. What do you want me to do? And he's like, I want you to break into a place and steal a thing. And he says, makes sense. You know? but because usually I think there's an association with having a second chance. Like, I would have done that completely differently, or to redeem myself, or to redeem the situation, I have to do it completely differently, or I have to, like, stop being this thing.
Yeah.
And, I mean, for good or bad, which we see both sides of it, Scott has been given this set of gifts, among them, you know, being really smart, being a mechanical engineer. Apparently parkour is one of his gifts. You know, like, he's got these gifts to break in and to understand how things work. And when he goes for redemption, he doesn't just redeem his past actions. He redeems his gifts by using them for something more noble.
Mm. Well, and that kind of hits at, like, what the older idea, or maybe even can say, like, a biblical idea of what redemption is that it's sort of buying back one's freedom. But it's buying it back to be free to do who you are, and so that's a really good point to bring that out. That it's sort of like he's redeeming himself by being who he's supposed to be, which is really kind of neat.
Are Griffin? Do you typically find yourself resonating with stories of redemption?
I obviously, you know, I really resonate with the story and enjoy it. I think that. When I think about, like, my favorite stories, I don't feel like most of them are story like this over the head story about redemption. Mm-hmm. Like, and I think that that's where
more subtle.
Yeah, I definitely think of, like, more subtle, like, movies about redemption. I mean, I think about one of my favorite movies. I mean, whenever I think about my favorite movie, I think about the story of, like, The Life Aquatic, where you have Steve Zissou going to track down, you know, the shark to, you know, avenge his fallen comrade, his fallen brother. And in that, he kind of redeems his own, who he is as a person and who he is as an adventurer, because now he's discovered this great shark and this, you know, and so it's something where I think this movie is so over the head with the concept of this is going to redeem you, this is going to redeem you, this is going to redeem you to everyone around you. That it's not, I'm like, yeah, I know. I get it.
Well, is it part of that because you have you live in a reality that you know you can't self-redeem yourself?
Yeah, so the thing about this is, like, really, and that's the good part of, that's, like, one of the cool parts about this movie is that in a lot of ways, he doesn't redeem himself. His ex-wife's husband redeems him by not turning him in, by saying, oh yeah, that was all legit. Whenever he got, like, that night, whenever he got booked in jail, like, that was all legit. And so he sacrificed for the sake of Scott Lang in that moment. And I'm just kind of like, okay, I appreciate the fact that they didn't just make it where, well, he gets done saving and then everyone loves him because he saved, you know, the people. So he killed the man, saved the people, good to go. Instead it was, you know, kill the man, save the peoples. And if he hadn't have been helped out by his, like, kind of nemesis in the movie, he would have ended up in jail again and still been in this place of lack of redemption.
Well, I like that because I feel like if you wanted to have one of those articles that are extreme sounding and are basically clickbait, you could just go ahead and post something out there that says, you know, sure, you enjoyed Ant-Man, but did you miss the real hero of the movie?
Yeah.
And it's just a story about Paxton being the real hero of the movie for loving his enemy or something stupid like that.
Who's doing it? Who's posting it? Come on.
Everyone needs a little clickbait, right?
Everyone needs a little bit.
Everybody needs a couple clickbait.
Yeah.
All right, so we are getting to about that time. This is what happens when we have super huge panels.
A question before we get to that time.
That time.
All right. I want us to go around. I want to start with Matt. I want to go to Josh. I want you to go next, Mikey.
Is this?
And then me, okay? I'm hijacking this for 1 second.
It's done.
All right. Favorite Paul Rudd film, go.
Starting with Matt?
Yeah, starting with Matt.
Let's see.
If you get it wrong and it's not actually Paul Rudd, it's okay.
Oh, I know. You know, I do love Anchorman, the original.
Okay.
That's not his...
It's not really his film, but yeah, he's good in that movie.
Yeah, I'll do that one for now, but maybe... I mean, I do like Paul Rudd. I remember even back in the days of Friends. I loved him on Friends.
Oh, yeah. It's good. All right. It's good. Josh.
Wait. So is it favorite Paul Rudd, that movie that he's in, or does he have to have a more prominent?
Well, clearly it can be movie that he's in, because Anchorman just got thrown out.
You're thinking too hard.
I'm thinking too hard. Well, I think I would say Anchorman, but for the sake of mixing it up a little
Don't
bit.
Don't take mine.
I know what it is. I think I know what it is, and I think I'm probably going to end up taking
what mine is.
No, just go.
Okay, good.
Wet Hot American Summer.
Oh, good. Then you didn't take mine.
Well, I think that's Mark that likes it that much. All right.
I own three different copies of I Love You, Man.
Oh, yeah.
I love that movie.
See,
it's
I
so
still
good.
Haven't seen it, but...
What?
No. You just skipped me.
I did skip you. I'm sorry.
Wow.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
You're the host now. Look at you. You're the host now. That's what happens. See the pressure that I'm under?
The pressure. It's so
All right,
much pressure.
So let me fix this for you.
Okay.
I would say that as a minor character, my favorite Paul Rudd movie is Wet Hot American Summer.
Yeah.
I think it's hilarious. I realize it's an acquired taste, but it's a hilarious movie.
It's a cult film. I guess.
As more of a lead character, my...
I love you, man.
It's not I Love You, Man. It's really? Role Models.
Oh, that's a... Oh!
Because Role Models, I just don't get tired of watching Role Models.
It's
so hilarious.
I just love watching them LARP. I feel like that.
Isn't it great?
It's just so great. I'm just like, this is fantastic. Why am I not doing this more often?
I don't think LARPing is really like that. I think that's the problem.
No, it's not that cool. And that's the thing. If it was that cool, we would all be doing it, right?
So, yep.
You know, back to television. Parks and Rec, he was awesome on Parks and Rec, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just love Paul Rudd. I mean, he was just in They Came Together, and I thought that was hilarious.
He's going to be in the new Wet Hot American Summer
miniseries. Oh gosh, I'm so excited for that. Anyway, Paul Rudd, I'm a huge Paul. I love you, man.
Yeah,
like it's great. It just I don't understand how people could not love Paul Rudd.
Yeah,
this what is it Monday? It's not Monday. This is Man Crush Wednesday. I think Paul Rudd's hilarious.
Yeah.
I think not only can he deliver a line, I think Paul Rudd's physical comedy, the faces and body motions that he makes, these very subtle things, are incredible. They're just hilarious. Like
I ruined it, didn't I? I love that moment.
I ruined it. That was one of my favorite moments. Like when he goes, I'm going to do some tea. You want some?
You want some?
The fingers?
Yeah.
Like, that's hilarious. That with anybody else would have been terrible.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I Love You, Man.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I feel like that was like, I don't know. For me, I watched that at the end of high school.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? When did that movie come out?
I don't know. We already had this discussion where, like, it blows my mind that you're so much younger than me. So
I'm sorry.
I don't even understand this.
So, I don't know. I've seen that movie a lot. Uh-huh. Like I said, I own a few copies of it.
It was 2009.
Okay, so that would have been my senior year of high school.
Oh, gosh.
Wow. How old
Wait,
do you
Griffin
guys feel?
Wait, Griffin is that young? All right, time out.
Is he even old enough to drive on a podcast?
He's not allowed to podcast.
Oh,
no, I don't think he's old enough to rent a podcast, right?
next year.
Well, he can be on the podcast, but he has to be on my insurance.
I'm under a permit.
But it came out at a defining time in your life.
Yeah, it came out because I watched it. I went to college, and then this is going to get real, real here right now. Oh, gosh.
That's why they call it real world theology.
This is real world theology. I watched it. I went to college. I didn't really have any, like, I never really, like, guy friends in high school are always, like, it's always, like, the bro thing. It's not actually, you're not
Video
actually
games and comic books.
Good friends with them. Yeah, and then you, like, get to college, and you meet, or whatever stage of life you did this, and you meet people who you're actually, like, brothers with, like, mm-hmm. you're actually like, I love you, man, and it's not weird and it's not like awkward. It's and that is by far one of my favorite movies, not only Paul Rudd but just in general. I love that movie, and I think it's just hilarious, and gosh,
I actually really want to see it again.
Yeah, you should. I might watch it tonight. You can come
if it's on Netflix. It would be my Netflix recommendations.
Yeah.
Mm. All right, well, now that we've done our favorite Paul Rudd moments,
okay,
let's wrap up the show Under the understanding that we still have a chance for a final thought, so don't feel like you have to squeeze everything in, but none of us thought Ant-Man was perfect. So where did it fall short for you, Matt?
All right. I was prepared for this. So I'll tell you the big one first. I have one big one and then two tiny ones.
All right.
Again, nope, intended.
All
right, so the biggest one for me is I kind of felt bad. You know, they took all this time establishing that his little ants were sort of like pets and friends, and he was naming some of them. And then you get towards the climax, and he uses the ants to build a boat for himself, and he's sort of surfing in this watery area. I can't remember exactly. It's kind of breaking into the building. And I just kept thinking about how sad it was. This is such a sad scene for all the ants that are at the bottom of that ant boat. I mean, they're just sacrificing themselves for Scott Lang to, you know, save the day. But so I think
they're rotating around. If you watch it, they were rotating from the bottom to the top.
I hope so, because otherwise they were the real heroes.
Yeah, I did have that same thought though.
That's your big one.
That was like my I mean,
that's, I love it. I love it.
That's great, right?
That's so awesome.
I was talking to a friend the other day about it. It's like, I really like this movie. I really can't think of too much I don't like. So I don't think I'm stealing anything from you guys with these two smaller ones. I kind of wish that Hydra hadn't appeared as a villain again. Yes. I think we could have lived without that.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess you had touched on this earlier, Fizz, but his parkour skills. I don't think there's any good reasoning given in the movie on why he's able to do that, because it seemed like it was more of a white collar crime. And then all of a sudden he's like an actual good thief.
8 feet walls. He's just 8 foot wall.
Hey, like, if you're going to be able to infiltrate a place, and you're going to be able to burgle somebody, if you're going to burgle them good,
burgle real good.
If you're going to burgle them good, you have to know parkour.
I think the correct terminology is robble.
No, he's not going to robble. No,
robble involves a weapon, and
no,
he didn't have.
You can only robble if you're stealing hamburgers.
Oh, that's right. So. From the Hamburglar.
This last thing. This is. I have one more thing I was just thinking about. This is more just in defense of a certain character. I didn't realize this until I talked to some friends about this movie, but I feel like I'm the only person that likes Falcon. Is that true? Do you guys not? I mean, you talked about him a little bit earlier, but I like this. I like the actor. I like the character. What do you guys think?
I'm going to beef with him.
Oh, yeah. I really like Falcon, and I'm really glad he's included, but I think when you start lining up your Avengers, Falcon's kind of at the bottom of the list.
I mean, it's true, and my friend was saying it's kind of like anybody can be Falcon. In fact, he said in Winter Soldier there was a whole team of people doing
what Falcon did.
Right. So I can see that, but I mean, I don't know.
Well, I think he's got a little. I think he's got a piece of. He's kind of got a little bit of. That's why I liked him in Winter Soldier. He's got a little bit of Captain America in him.
Yeah,
he's got that piece of heart. That you're probably average.
Oh, he's no Steve Rogers. You calm down.
No. I said he's got a little piece of
okay,
it.
Okay, I would say you're talking about a little tiny piece.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
fine.
Yeah.
So, you know, he ain't no Steve Rogers.
Yeah, so
okay?
So what we saw in Steve Rogers in the first Avenger, that something.
Willing to stand up to bullies.
That set him apart
okay.
from all the other super soldiery people that were in the program.
As it should.
As it should be. So that a little piece of that separated Steve Rogers from all the other guys in the program is I would say Falcon has a slice of that separates him from anybody else who can wear that pack.
Yeah.
Okay.
Totally agree. I'm over here nodding my head, but you can't, but just imagine me talking and nodding. That's what's happening.
Yes. But I say that with the idea that on the list of Avengers, he's still right
he's
down there
Vision.
Towards the bottom.
He's below Vision because Paul Bettany. Come on, right?
Well, I mean, I just think Vision's pretty great in general.
Paul Bettany.
So, yeah, I'm sorry if anyone out there, through my explanation of maybe the unnecessariness of Falcon in Ant-Man, would get the impression.
Thank you for
that Falcon was not important.
Yeah.
I just think when you go into that situation, I feel like from a monetary standpoint, from a business decision, from Kevin Feige or whatever his name is, from his decision, he's like, I can pay this guy this much to be in the movie and tie it to Avengers, or I'd have to pay Robert Downey Jr. $15 million for him to be in the movie for 15 minutes.
RDJ, what a guy.
And that's probably where that decision was made. But Falcon, great. Can't wait to see him again.
Thank you. That's all I wanted to hear.
There's an internet high five for you, Matt.
All right,
Josh.
Okay.
Did Josh fall asleep? Okay, there
no.
he is.
Josh,
no.
Wake up.
No, I'm here. I was preparing.
Oh.
Contemplative.
No, I've got two things, and one of them might be a little bit quibbly, but the first one is kind of one of the things that really made me not like the movie necessarily as much as I think I could have, is because you could definitely see the script tension between Adam McKay's rewrite and Paul Rudd's rewrite and Edgar Wright, because there's still Edgar Wright is woven throughout this movie. Is it fair to say that the whole Michael Pena bit where he's like narrating people's voices or whatever, that's thoroughly an Edgar Wright thing?
Yeah.
I mean, for sure. I felt like during the movie I was playing the, is this Edgar Wright or is this Adam McKay?
And I feel like that was the most obvious Edgar Wright thing that he like.
Yeah. The most obvious? I thought the Thomas the Tank Engine thing was the most Edgar Wright thing.
Oh, I mean, yeah. I mean, that was very. But like, I felt like the Thomas Pena thing was something that like or, I think. Yeah. That,
sorry, Michael Pena
is something that like Edgar Wright has done in the past, or like very similar to that, and it felt very like his humor,
because that's the way he directs. He doesn't just let someone sit there and exposit to you as an audience member. He gives you visuals and makes it engagingly part of the story. Yeah,
watch Hot Fuzz, you'll get it.
Yeah, watch Hot Fuzz.
Yeah.
Or heck, The World's End
or Dawn of the Dead.
Yep.
Or Shaun of the Dead. I
mean, basically watch any of his films. Anyway,
yeah, watch anyways, continue,
Josh.
But yeah, Josh, so and I just felt like there was a couple McKay Rudd sort of bits or things that Paul Rudd does when he's in McKay movies that sort of were shoehorned into the movie that kind of made it a little bit awkward and clunky at times, just as far as the sort of the smoothness of delivery and just how Rudd was able to go through, which I thought was kind of interesting because, you know, Rudd had his hand in rewriting the script, but I felt like at times Rudd wasn't fully being Rudd, which I don't know if that had anything to do with Wright leaving or what or whatever. But anyways, I just, you know, there was definite portions where I felt that tension and it sort of took away from the smooth funness. Like, you know, it's like in, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy is thoroughly a James Gunn movie. And it's just, you can tell, and it's fun, and it's quirky, and it's weird, and it's a little crass, and like as crass as a Marvel movie can get. And it's definitely James Gunn. And then, you know, like the Avengers movies are Joss Whedon movies, quick, fast, witty dialogue. And it's just, in this movie, it was like, that's what they wanted. But then somehow they got involved and things didn't go the way they wanted. And it's just, it would have been really great to have walked away from that and been like, this is an Edgar Wright superhero movie. And that would have been really great. So that, I guess that was probably my major problem or what I didn't like. And then the only other thing that I had was when a Corey Stoll's character, is it Darren? Derek?
Yeah. Derek. No, Darren Cross.
Darren Cross.
Darren Cross. Okay, that's it. I'm assuming that when he is in the yellow jacket suit, that's the first time he's ever put it on. I don't think that he was probably testing it out because he was afraid of turning into that pile of goo that happens in the movie. And I just, the thing was, like, I guess I had to suspend a little bit of disbelief that he was that good in the suit right away against somebody who had been in the Ant-Man suit for a while, and he was able to best Ant-Man in a fight.
Yeah, because it made it seem like right before that he was still, you know, doing the final testing preparations, and all of a sudden he's like, yeah, I'm good to go, we're good to...
Right, and then he is Yellow Jacket, and then he fights Ant-Man and somehow can, you know, sort of be toe-to-toe with him to a certain extent
attached to his head.
He's got freaking laser beams. Well, I would say that too. It was weird to see the Yellow Jacket suddenly be just like really good at fighting. Mm-hmm. Lots of it in the beginning did seem to be kind of made up by the fact that he was shooting most of the time. But then the going from the, you know, small to large, small to large, did seem a little instantaneous.
He was good at that.
He was really good at it.
Yeah.
So I think that's fair.
Yeah, I think it's fair.
Griff?
I'm gonna be like kind of clickbaity as we're talking about that. I did not like the treatment of like Hope's character in the story,
mm-hmm.
and how she obviously knew what she was doing and Paul Rudd did not.
Mm-hmm.
And she was getting like passed over time and time again throughout the story whenever it was taking longer for Scott Lang to figure it out than it was for her. Like, she already knew it.
So you didn't buy into the Hank Pym regretful father, protective
I'm totally father. Cool with him being protective. I'm totally cool with him being regretful. I just feel like the way that it was handled in the movie, they could have... There were times where they poked fun at it by, like, her beating him up.
Mm-hmm.
By her showing him how to do the thing. Maybe this is another place where Edgar Wright just did... Like, his script would have shown up differently. I feel like he would have poked more fun at it. Mm-hmm. He would have made it more of, like, hey, this is a joke. She's way better at this than he is.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know it. And because of the state of things, the guy has to be the guy.
Mm-hmm.
She can't be in the suit. And I felt like this, you know, this script didn't really pull out that aspect of the movie.
I think that's fair. Because so I'll let that transition. Is that what your main
thing? Yeah, that was my only thing. I have one thing.
So one of my things was... And they even say it, I believe, I don't remember how they phrased it, but kind of like, why didn't you tell me earlier? Like, why didn't Hank Pym, you know, tell Hope earlier? Why didn't he tell his daughter earlier? It seemed like it would have made more sense instead of the running joke being like, why is she not doing it? Why do we have the training montage with a guy who's, you know, just now hopefully going to say yes?
Yeah.
Like, why are we going through all this when she could just do it? It could have been like him saying this to her and her saying, I understand, I respect that decision, I will help you in any way I can because I realize that as my father, you're just looking out for me. I don't like it, but I respect it because at least I understand now. I feel like that conversation could have happened a long time ago.
And before, like I said, the movie.
Before, yeah, the movie.
Like, she already knew what the story was, and he had to just rehash it. And, you know, he was helping her. I was like... And then, you know, and then it's like, if you're still being the overprotective father, why are you, like, what changes in the movie to make him decide to pass her, like, to show her the wasp suit and be like, nothing. The only thing that changes in the movie is that Scott Lang proves that he can come back from being on the atomic level.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, if that's
all that they needed, sure, great. But I didn't feel like they didn't pull that out enough. And, you know, maybe I just didn't acknowledge it. Because there's that scene where he's like, did you see anything? Do you remember anything? Mm-hmm. And he's like, no, I don't remember anything.
I don't remember anything.
And maybe that's enough. Sure, I just didn't buy into a lot of that.
So, like, I get that. But I would say it's a nitpicky thing. Because if they did it before, then I think it takes a lot of the pieces of the story away.
Mm-hmm.
And it also doesn't leave us with Hank Pym having more of a character arc.
Okay.
Not a totally deserved character arc. By the end, saying, we realized we were always designing this suit for you.
Okay.
You know, we need Hope to be the Wasp. We don't need her to be Ant-Man. Because, you know, maybe he knows he has something better for her.
She's got wings.
She has wings.
She needed a stupid ant to help her.
That's
out.
Right. She didn't have to fly on an ant. That gets
Anthony's dead, so what's going to happen?
Yeah.
That wing.
The wing.
And then it landed and then just fell. And I was like, oh, that's great.
And so I feel like most of the things that I'm having a problem with in this movie seem to be kind of nitpicky, or they're like, oh, it's kind of like a plot hole, but, you know, in the grand scheme of what you're doing in this movie, is that the thing that I'm going to find a problem with? You know, like, I can believe that people have come up with a way to shrink the space between atoms and they can actually shrink down to the size of an ant. I don't have a problem with that, but I have a problem with X or Y or Z instead.
Yeah.
So I realize that most of my gripes are along that line, but the other one that I had was the fact that it seemed like there was a lot of chance, like a lot of chance, in Hank Pym's overall plan to get Scott Lang to rob his house.
That it would never happen.
That I was just like how would you know who? Like that's a lot of That's a lot of knowledge.
It's a lot of Kevin Bacon separation right yeah. there. Yeah. And it just fell together perfectly.
Yeah, and a lot of hoping that was going to happen.
Yeah.
But see, like I said, but because it happened, it allowed us to kind of have like a cool story. And I'm willing to forgive that to get to the points they needed to get to.
Yeah.
So I say that as my gripes, but I'm kind of reaching too.
Yeah.
So, because hopefully, like Matt, you know, I enjoyed this so much. Eh, there wasn't a lot I didn't like. I left the theater and kept really enjoying it. So, so we end on a much better note, which is favorite moments. Matt,
yeah.
Why did you really, really like this film?
All right. So, I mean, the visuals were so unique and so well done. It really was a spectacle. So this spectacle of the small, you could say, where like even in that train scene where we saw it in the trailer, but it still worked for me. I still love that scene, even though you kind of knew what the funny beats were going to be. I just thought it was really, really well done visually. So that was a high point for me. Another one, I have a daughter who's only 8 months old. And so I think if I had seen this a year ago, it might not have hit me quite the same way, but I really did appreciate the father-daughter relationship themes that were happening, both with Hank and Hope and Cassie and Scott. And that worked well for me. I guess just like you were saying, I guess I kind of wish that he would have told her the story about what happened sooner. But other than that, I liked how Hank saw, by Scott getting redemption in Cassie's eyes, it was going to lead to potentially Hank also getting some sort of redemption in Hope's eyes, or even just the idea that he couldn't get it with Hope, so he's going to help a different guy be able to get redemption. Yeah. So I liked everything that was happening with that. Last thing, I loved the opening scene with Howard Stark and Peggy Carter was there and young Michael Douglas. More than even that scene was just this idea that we had an Ant-Man going around during the Cold War. And yeah. We saw those pictures, those snapshots of what he was doing. Now this, if there is a sequel, I'd love to actually have it be a prequel. I want to see Cold War Ant-Man.
Young Michael Douglas?
They'd have to recast him, of course. But, yeah, more another kind of – I like the espionage stuff. I loved Winter Soldier. Go for that again in a different time period with this other Ant-Man. I don't know if they'll do that, but I think that would be amazing.
Well, it's definitely something they could do like in a phase 5 once they have to recast some of the characters anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Because you would already have to recast Michael Douglas.
You just reboot.
Yeah.
Reboot the universe.
Just be like, boom, remember when we said this happened? We're not being contradictory. We're just showing you a piece of it.
Space-time continuum. Boom. New world.
Boom. Lots of boom words.
Earth 2.
All right, Josh.
I mean, first of all, I got to say, like, I completely resonate with, like, my favorite part was those visuals of just, I loved seeing him and how seamlessly they were transferring from big to small. And I felt like, you know, that could have been done really clumsily, and they did such a great job. And I know a lot of it's obviously CGI, but, Paul Rudd wasn't actually shrinking down to ant-like size. But you know, just those visuals were so much fun and so good, and it just made that was probably one of the most fun parts of the entire movie. I really liked the Chekhov's gun of the tank on his keychain. Oh,
so good.
And it's just that made me, when it came out of there, that part made me audibly just kind of like, you know, give a laughing shout of I'm really liking what's happening right now in this movie. And which would have been great because the person that I went with was actually asleep during that portion of the movie. It's not his
Who
fault.
Who do you hang out with?
He wasn't bored. He was very tired. He works like he works a job where he can get called in the middle of the night to go somewhere. Uh-huh. So if he's in a dark theater, he can get tired very quickly. So it's not to his fault, but it's just I'm surprised that my shout didn't wake him up because it was pretty loud. I really enjoyed that portion of it. So I mean, there was those elements. I mean, I love Paul Rudd, so I'm always gonna like what he's doing in a movie. I appreciated that they alluded to the fact that seemingly Baskin Robbins is more powerful than S.H.I.E.L.D. and Hydra in their ability to find out information.
Baskin Robbins always finds out.
I know. Yeah. Josh stole one of mine.
So good. So good.
And it wasn't because someone said it at the beginning. It's that, like, was it Michael Pena? Like, no, said
it was T.I. Yeah.
Oh, was it T.I.?
It was T.I. later. He was like, yeah, Baskin Robbins always finds out.
Always find out. It's because, you know, more than one person knew. You know? That was the way to set that joke up.
And the product placement was so good that I actually made sure that I knew where the Baskin Robbins was in town just so I could look at it and be like, Baskin Robbins always finds out, man.
Oh, man.
All right, Griffin.
Yeah, I'm with you. I remember back in 2012 whenever they showed that trailer, like kind of the working, you know, basically like in a special effects trailer for this, like that whenever they had announced the movie. They announced Ant-Man and then they showed the trailer of just like that hallway fight scene that wasn't actually in the movie and was never probably going to be in the movie. But I remember seeing that and being like, that's really cool. Like the way that he's transitioning and like jumping and punching and then bigger. And, you know, I was like, oh, it's so cool the way they handle it. And that was like one of the best things about this movie was the special effects and the way that it just felt, the whole movie felt very seamless. And a lot of movies don't do that, especially in the Marvel Universe. They kind of, they don't struggle through it, but I think sometimes it feels like a bit much. And I think that this felt very much a part of the story. The effects did, and they made the ants feel very much part of the story. I will say there was times where I felt like I was watching a 3D movie because the ants didn't look real. Like, the ants looked a little blurry. I don't know if any of you guys had that at your theater. Maybe that was just where I was at, but I was at a nice theater, so maybe who knows. Who knows what they were doing. I thought it was nice. It's a pretty nice theater in town. Sorry, again, I just did that. Okay. And honestly, T.I. and Michael Pena, and then the guy from The Dark Knight. Oh, I don't know his name, I think I looked it up, and I don't know how to say it.
I think it's.
And but I love the comedic relief of those guys in like conjunction with Paul Rudd, because Paul Rudd is such a, like, you know, he's good at that. Like they were the great blue collar humor to Paul Rudd's a little bit more on the nose stuff, kind of like hitting at like the less obvious jokes, and so I appreciated that a lot. And I thought they were really fun. Like, whenever T.I. showed up, I was just like, heck yes, T.I. is here. That's awesome.
So that's really cool, because I feel like a lot of the criticism that's leveled against the Marvel Cinematic Universe, these films, especially as we continue down this road, whatever Matt was saying, like 12 films in, is that they rely too much on special effects. You know, you're getting special effects and fighting fatigue. And yet one of the things that almost everyone, or actually all you guys are praising in this film, are the special effects and how they were used to help tell the story and advance that story, not detract from it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah. And I just, I'm sorry, briefly, I won't steal your thunder or anything, Fizz, but you know, just how it was used differently. You know, I think I tried to hit at that, but I couldn't make my review much more lengthy. But just how the special effects kept the movie grounded, instead of, you know, most of what we get with superheroes is all in the air above the cityscape. And this was all on the ground or below, which I thought was really interesting and different, which made it more fun and interesting and not as, you know, it's not like, oh, another superhero's flying around. Nope, this guy's like going underground and through water mains and all this kind of cool
carpet
stuff.
The scene where he's like running through the carpet, and I was like, this is really cool. Like, this is a great look at how, you know, especially like the carpet's kind of like separating, you know, as he's running through it, kind of like a corn maze would. And I was like, oh, it's like a good way to deal with this. And then, like, you know, where they threw the, when he was like pick up and throw the train pieces and they would explode. And I was like, this is really good. I don't know. It's just, it all felt really, it felt like it was pushing the story in a way that was that, like,
without having to destroy a city.
Yeah, without having to destroy a city, you just destroy a train.
Yeah, so
a really small train.
So eat it, Ant-Man haters.
Yeah.
Well, so I think that in and of itself is cool. Mm-hmm. I love the fact that we're taking something that most people have been criticizing throughout this series, and it's now become a strength. And I hope that continues. But most of my likes about this film revolved around characters. We've already talked about our great love for Paul Rudd.
And, we like Paul Rudd,
and I
like Michael Douglas.
I think that continues. Michael Douglas in this film, to me, gives this, just his presence and like every scene that he's in, he gives this film, which for most, I mean, it seems like a comedy, you know, for all intents and purposes, it's a comedy. Mm-hmm. Lots of it. It's a heist film, but it's a hilarious, like, laugh out loud at times, Anchorman-esque kind of comedy. And he comes in and doesn't detract from the comedy, but like I said, adds that gravitas so things still have stakes. Mm. And what he does, he reminds me of like a more front and center version of Tommy Lee Jones' character in Captain America the First Avenger. Like, because, you know, we're like, hey, big superhero thing, and Tommy Lee Jones keeps coming in and saying, well, I'm crotchety and old, and we still got to remember that we got a job to do. And so even though you're like, super, he's like, still got a job to do. And so Michael Douglas is like, hey, I know things are wild and fantastic, but there's some stakes here. And I think he conveyed that well. I think he conveyed his hesitations with Hope taking on the Ant-Man costume well, for as much as that was developed. I think, he, you know, what he did, his relationship with Scott was done well. I just, in general, Michael Douglas, I really think is a key component to this film's success. Mm-hmm. Also, I was going to mention the Baskin-Robbins things because it was so random and it was hilarious. Mostly, I'm a huge fan of Drunk History. And if you guys have not been watching Drunk History, it's hilarious and informative. Comedy Central show where they usually have people get incredibly drunk and then tell a story about history. And then they have people do the mouth acting to someone else's story. And all of Michael Pena's stories were that way.
Oh, okay.
And they were hilarious. That motif completely worked in this film, and I love the fact that there was so much more to Michael Pena's character because of that. You know, he would say, like, I was looking at this type of piece of art, but everyone knows I'm more into, like, you know, Roman cubism or, you know, something random, and just like having this overtly smart thing to say. So it was funny, even though there were two distinctive types of humor in this film. I think they blended well enough that it didn't distract me and it didn't detract. So I love all those things about the film. There wasn't one particular scene that was like my favorite. Just a whole bunch of ideas that I came away with going, God, that was really great. That was really great. I love this thing about it. So with that said, we wrap up. Anyone, free for all, anything we didn't talk about, anything that you wanted to say before we close out, final thoughts on Ant-Man?
Here's my final thought / question for everybody here. So, you know, I'm not sure what Marvel and Disney's ultimate marketing plan is for Ant-Man, but, you know, 10 years ago, Iron Man wasn't a hit with kids. You know, I bet most kids wouldn't have even known who Iron Man is, and now you've got them dressing up like Iron Man for Halloween and playing with the toys. So that was 10 years ago. Do you think Ant-Man is on his way to becoming, specifically with kids, sort of this next big hero? Or is he just going to be kind of left in the dust? Because, I mean, I would say this is a fairly kid-friendly movie. Not 100%, but fairly. Mm-hmm. So what do you guys think about that? Is he going to be... Will kids be dressing up like Ant-Man this Halloween?
I know a kid who begged his dad, and his dad obliged him by making a costume. He wanted to dress up as Ant-Man last year for Halloween. So I feel like it's heading that way. Like, his dad was so excited because now there's stuff to have him an Ant-Man birthday party, and because he thinks it's the greatest thing. So at least with one kid that I know of, like the 10, he was like super pumped about Ant-Man. So yeah, I definitely feel like it's heading that way. As like Hawkeye has with a lot of children, and you know, you see a lot of people.
You think so? You think you see a lot of Hawkeye?
I've seen like a lot of masks and stuff like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can see people wanting to dress up like Ant-Man on occasion, but I really, it's hard for me to imagine that he's still going to be like a tier one. You know, I feel like people or kids are always going to want to dress up as the Hulk, Iron Man, and Captain America.
Star-Lord's right. Popular, man.
Well, and now because of Guardians of the Galaxy, Star-Lord.
Chris Pratt. What a guy.
Well, he just made it look cool.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know if this is noteworthy, but the other day I was at Target, so I was just curious about this idea of where is Ant-Man going marketing-wise. So I swung by the toy aisle at Target just to see, and they do have Guardians of the Galaxy. They still have Captain America. There's tons of Iron Man around, but there were zero Ant-Man movie tie-in toys, or even really, I don't think I even saw an Ant-Man toy in general. So Not saying that that's a deciding factor, but kind of interesting.
Well, my guess is they were probably going to see what the reaction to Ant-Man was. I doubt that you could buy a ton of Guardians of the Galaxy toys before Guardians of the Galaxy came out.
Yeah, day and date. That's movie probably. Release, yeah.
But then, you know, a month later, I'm sure you couldn't not find Guardians of the Galaxy toys. So,
yeah,
I imagine they already have their order into China and they're just waiting to pull the trigger based on the based on how much money Ant-Man makes. That'd be my guess, though.
Yeah.
Good question. Is that all, Matt?
Well, what do you think? Better than Age of Ultron, the other Marvel movie from this year?
Ew.
I do not fall into the category of a number of people who thought Age of Ultron 2 was trying to do too much. I thought what it had to do, it did, and I thought it did it beautifully. And I wish it was another hour long to fit the rest of the stuff in there that Whedon wanted to put in there. So I think Age of Ultron is still right in the top for me.
Josh, you said Ant-Man?
No, I was saying that Ultron was better. I just I really enjoyed the villain, in Age of Ultron. I enjoyed Ultron so much. But no, I still enjoyed Ultron more than I enjoyed Ant-Man. And I just thought it was better a better movie. And again, you know, I keep going back to the script.
It's different.
But you know, it's I keep going back to the fact that like until I'm proven otherwise, Whedon can do no wrong in my mind, and he does such a good job of making those characters like human yet funny and superhero like that he can't be beat. And I'm sad that he is bowing out of the Marvel Cinematic Universe just because of the quality that he brings to the movies that he's done.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, I trust Whedon, and I like what he's done. And I mean, even if it hadn't been him directing it, James Spader was so good in that movie as simply a voice actor that I was like, yeah, that movie. I mean, like he was a top tier movie villain in that movie.
So yeah. Griffin, you say Ultron over Ant-Man?
Can we all
give me a week? Yeah, give me a week because I always feel really strongly about movies right after I see them, and then I'll think about it and be like, yeah, but there's all this stuff that like was way better. Because with Ultron, I ended up, you know, I think whenever I left the theater, I gave it like a 9. I put like a 9 on IMDb.
I'm fine with that.
And I think it's like I think I may have it at like 8 now. Yeah. And I've started Ant-Man at 8, so it could go down. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
I think I'll put Ant-Man above it, but I did like Ultron, so yeah.
Well, that's interesting to me, and this goes back to people wanting to not like some of the Marvel stuff. I noticed that we constantly reference this because it's one thing that if we always reference it, it can be kind of the bar that we use, and that's Rotten Tomatoes, because I think a lot of people use it. I noticed that when Ant-Man was released, Rotten Tomatoes, based on the early critical reviews, was somewhere like around 65%. And now that it's been out for like a week and lots of other critics have had a chance to review it and lots of other people who I don't think or who I would say are probably less agenda driven, it's up, I think, at 80% now.
Yep.
Or something. Like it's steadily climbed ever since it's been out. I think I think it's winning people over. You know? So I think Ant-Man's a great film. I think it's a great addition to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It makes me excited to see. Actually, I'm not even sure if this is possible, but like seeing Paul Rudd and Robert Downey Jr. like on the same screen is really weird for me to think about. It just doesn't work in my head somehow. Hmm. So I'm really interested to see how that's going to work out.
Do they look too much alike?
No, no. It's just like they're like, how do you have a movie with two people who have the last word?
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like they're both kind of snarky, kind of.
And it's very possible that they're never on the same screen.
Yeah, and it's possible. But and so it's weird. You know, it would be like if, you know, whenever Peter Parker and like Iron Man have to like be throwing
like retorts
at yeah. each other like all movie. It's like, oh my god, you know.
I get that it. would be like a great how it should have ended.
Yeah.
Video. It was just like an hour of them just going back and forth.
Yeah, because it's like it's the how it should have ended like basically Batman Superman thing. It's like yeah, because this yeah, but I'm Batman.
You know,
yeah. Just having the last word.
Oh, those videos are so good. If you've never seen them, you should look it up on YouTube.
Any other final thoughts?
You guys, you just mentioned Peter Parker, and we know Spider-Man was mentioned in not named but alluded to in Ant-Man. So first MCU reference. Do you think? I would love to see this, a bug themed team up, Spider-Man, Ant-Man together. Will this ever happen in the movies?
Well, and Arachnid. Not really I guess it is bug.
Yeah, it's definitely bug like.
It's insect like.
Insect like.
I mean, it's like a natural combination.
It seems like they'd be natural enemies.
Really?
Mm. Yeah, spiders and ants.
Yeah, I guess.
I was like, do you not know how nature works? I can explain it to you.
Ants are more ground level though. They're not really flying around unless they're carpenter ants.
Yeah, but they get up anyway. They get up in there. Spider don't care. Spider don't care.
Yeah, but if like that bullet ant tagged a spider, spider would be down for the count. Also, can we talk about this? The bullet ant like affected no one.
Oh, it didn't.
No, it left like a little welt on his neck.
It knocked that one guy out.
No,
well,
he
before
punched
he punched him.
Well,
yeah,
that's
what
I'm saying.
It was headed there.
Like I've seen like I remember reading up on this like years ago because I was like, what's the worst bite that you can get from an insect besides like spider bites?
Mm-hmm.
And that was like the top one. And I was like, I'm excited to see how this works out in a movie. And it was not scary at all. If I was in that movie, I would not be afraid of bullet ants.
Well, you have to realize you are having children come to this movie. So you want to be careful about having like someone being like pussy and gangrenous from a ant bite.
Bullet ants are the real deal, people. Don't mess with them.
Yeah.
Don't mess with them. Okay.
I agree. Is that your PSA?
Is that my PSA?
Yeah.
Attention, public service announcement.
Griffin Kyle says,
people of America, listen up.
Bullet ants are the real deal, says Griffin Kyle.
Oh,
all right. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us on that note. Because we wouldn't have had this fine discussion and all these fine public service announcements without this wonderful group of avenging people. So I want people to be able to follow you guys, interact with you guys, and keep this conversation going. If they're the person who doesn't like Falcon, how can they get a hold of you, Matt, and tell you why they think Falcon is dumb?
All right, so I've got two podcasts people can check out. The first one is called Comic Book Time Machine, in which we talk about comic books from present day and from the past. So that's at comicbooktimemachine.com. And my other podcast is called The Sci-Fi Christian, which you can find at thescifichristian.com, where we talk about pop culture, theology, lots of other things all mixed together.
And you say The Sci-Fi Christian, is that THUH Sci-Fi Christian?
It is THE.
The
Sci-Fi.
THA. The sci-fi Christian, man.
THE sci-fi Christian.com.
And you have your Twitter name that you don't ever use?
Yeah, no, I mean, I use it. So I mean, I don't remember this, but on I think it was either the last time I was here or two times ago, I was saying I need to get a new Twitter
handle
because it's right now just MAnderson555.
It's Manderson.
You're not Batmanderson? I feel like that's probably taken by someone.
Yeah. Right? Hey, I should try that. Yeah, Batmanderson. That's a good idea. But yeah, I think I primarily use Sci-Fi Christian's Twitter handle. But yeah, okay. I know what you mean. I need a new one.
Either way. They can interact with you that way.
I feel like someone... No, I know what it is. There's this new podcast about being a dad, and the guy one of the guys that's on that show is Bat Manderson, I think, or something.
Because I was going to say, one of my my favorite character from the Tick live action show is Batmanwell.
Batmanwell.
Batmanwell. I have his action figure up there.
Batmanwell.
Batmanwell. Played by the guy from Lost. All right, Josh. John Locke? Not John Locke. Josh, how people can find you?
You can find me. I'm on Twitter at Hey It's That Josh. I'm starting to use Twitter more, which I never thought would ever happen. But I'm starting to get into it after having a Twitter handle for like 7 years. You can find me on the Facebook for Movie Lovers, Letterboxd. I love writing there. I recently got one of my friends to start using Letterboxd again, which I'm very excited for. So if you're on Letterboxd, you can be my friend and I'll convince you to use it more.
You can be my friend.
You can also find me all the writing and talking that I do is at Real World Theology, writing reviews. I got my Star Wars series just starting up and doing reviewing the classics with a couple other contributors on the site. Those are amping up and getting more intense as time is going on. So keep looking out for those at Real World Theology. And, that's where you can find me here at Real World Theology and all about the interweb.
Question. About your Star Wars things.
Yeah.
Are you going to be reviewing like the peripheral movies around the classics? I'm wondering about Ewoks and Ewoks 2 specifically.
You know,
I'm asking for a friend, actually. Sorry.
My initial thing is walking through all 6 movies,
okay,
in chronological order of when they were released, not like chronological order within like the Star Wars universe.
4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3.
And just using each one to kind of unfold, you know, some of the different things. Like in this one, I talked a little bit more about the first one. I talked about Luke Skywalker's hero's journey and how we've concentrated on the hero's journey. And now it's sort of like it's really Lucas made it about a community on a hero's journey together. And then this next one, a little preview for those of you who care. You know, I'm going to be talking a lot more about like the concept and the theology of the Force because of, you know, in Empire Strikes Back. You have
midichlorians.
Midichlorians are off limit because it hasn't happened in the movies yet. So I'm trying to be specific to what the Empire Strikes Back has to say about the Force, while also drawing from some other things as well. And going from there, and trying to get at like what was Lucas trying to say back in 1977 when Star Wars came out, or what was he trying to say in 1980 when The Empire Strikes Back came out, et cetera, et cetera. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. I'm kind of using a couple different places as like research, and just watching the movies for the umpteenth time is great. So any excuse for me to be able to watch Star Wars more than once in a given week is great for me. But you know, I could get around to it because the first Ewoks movie, I watched that movie so many times when I was a kid, because my grandma had it on a VHS that she recorded like when it was on CBS or something like that.
Yeah.
And I wore that VHS out. So it's just like, you know, all those characters, they're a part of the regular world of Endor for me. Mm-hmm. And even though they are so far removed that a lot of people treat them like the Christmas special with Star Wars movies a lot, you know?
It was the Christmas special on Star Wars. but yeah, I remember watching, because I saw that before I saw The Return of the Jedi for some reason. Like, as a kid, it just, like, that's just what I saw first. And I remember, like, getting to that scene in Return of the Jedi and being like, oh, I wonder if all those characters are here. I wonder where they're at in the scene. Yeah, that's funny. Griffin, you can find me on Twitter, Griffin_Kale. It's really the only place I'm remotely funny or humorous at all.
That's bad. I've seen you there.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's not good.
don't get your hopes up.
There's no hope. Like, don't come there expecting hilarity. You're going to need to go elsewhere for that. But yeah, there's that. I'm actually after a, what is this, 8-month hiatus, I'm like quietly back on Facebook, but if I don't like actually personally know you, I won't add you. So
you couldn't sneak by me, Griffin. I saw you.
Yeah, I apologize. I will add you if I personally know you or I have recorded a podcast with you. That is about it at this point.
I just like 2 days ago.
Oh yeah, yeah. I literally got back on like 2 days ago. So you caught it right at the moment.
Thanks for accepting my friendship.
Yeah, no problem. I knew you were, and I was like, hey, I know that guy. It's not like. Yeah, it's not a matter of, I don't know. It's a weird place to be. And then I have a website that I haven't posted to in a while. But yeah, a lot of stuff is in the works as usual. And hopefully I'm about to move. And then once I'm done moving, I will be announcing and doing some of this stuff. So really excited about the next year and more time to work on things that I enjoy, like recording a podcast and writing.
Hopefully things that other people enjoy
too. Yeah, hopefully other people enjoy it too. And if you don't, that's okay. Like, honestly, I'm not going to look at download numbers because I just don't know that I care. So hope you listen and hope you'll like check out what I'm doing. And so that website is griffinkale.com. Pretty simple. But if you go there right now, like I said, there's not much. Sorry.
So don't apologize, man.
And, but I do write on Real World Theology. I am finishing up a review for Mission Impossible 2 and Tom Cruise's hair. That's what I'm calling this review. Mission Impossible 2, Tom Cruise's hair. Working on some stuff. I've got some half-finished ones for Wes Anderson movies that will at some point be posted once I decide that they're worthy of Real World Theology's high standards.
I assume that I will get those reviews whenever I finish reading Lock and Key.
Yeah, when you finish reading Lock and Key, you can have those reviews. How about that? 2 years in the making, folks.
Oh.
But yeah, really, really glad to be here as always. And I think I'll be back in a couple weeks for Fantastic Four.
Oh, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm really looking forward to that movie. I really am. I'm pumped.
Well, yeah, I think we have a pretty great lineup. This summer has been really great, and I hope everyone who's been listening to the show has been enjoying it. We've been really enjoying recording. I have said, I believe, on more than one podcast that I think that 2015 will probably be remembered 10 years from now as one of the best years in cinema.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I think cinema's getting better and better in general, but like last year was kind of a down year. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not saying there wasn't anything good, but I think there are some pivotal films that are going to come out this year.
Wes Andersonville came out last year. Let's not.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There were some good films that came out last year.
Some highlights.
I think 2015 already is monumental. And I think with what's coming out towards the end of the year, we're going to have a really great lineup all year. So stick with us. We always will listen to suggestions. There's a small slow time coming up soon. So if you have suggestions, feel free to give those to us. And if you want to follow me, then you can follow me on Twitter at Fizzification. I'll listen to your suggestions there. Or you can send them to the show at Real World Theo on Twitter. If you'd like to know more about Real World Theology, if you haven't already, then visit our website, realworldtheology.com. That's R-E-E-L, worldtheology.com. Connect with us on Facebook and Twitter. We're fairly active there. Look for new episodes of this show on the 1st, the 10th, and the 20th of every month. You can find them on iTunes or Stitcher, so subscribe to them. I do sometimes look at download numbers because I love to know that there's lots of people always joining the conversation, giving me or whoever the guest happens to be that week feedback or continuing that conversations. It's so encouraging to hear people leaving a theater talking about the themes of a movie instead of just being like, I like it when that blew up. I mean, because that's cool, but I want it to be, I like when that blew up, and because much like we talked about redemption, we kind of want to redeem entertainment too. We don't want to just go and turn our brains off. We want to realize that there's people asking questions and answering questions and exploring themes and ideas and kind of bring that into one place and make sure that we're talking about it because we're spending lots of money to do it.
Mm.
So anything that you put that much money into, I hope that you're getting more out of it than checking out for a couple hours. So if you enjoy the show, if you enjoy what we do here, review the show, leave us some feedback, tell your friends, and like I said, let's get more people involved in the conversation. But as always, I'm so grateful to Matt, to Josh, to Griffin for being here. So please follow them on their social media outlets. You know, the ways to contact them, follow their work, follow their podcasts, follow them around the web. And meanwhile, we are very, very thankful for you, the listeners, for taking time to make us part of your week. So until next episode, remember that story is powerful and entertainment is not mindless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
See ya.
Bye.
I just hate George Lucas. I'm sorry. I'm glad people love him, but he hates his fans.
No, I hate George Lucas, too.
He hates his fans, and I hate him.
Yeah,
and I hate him.
That's why I hate him, too.
I don't really care. Griffin, I love you.
That's why you record.
Fuck Griffin. It's like Stephen Hawking just took over George Lucas's body.
Griffin,
I love you.
So
I'm retired.